Oh, wrong one.
Love that sound.
Welcome to Conspiracy Beer Me. I'm Justin.
And I'm Shane.
And you are listening to the podcast that's making conspiracies fun again. Today we're going to talk about all things paranormal with our guest, who has a lifelong experiences, a life of experiences with
absolutely
paranormal things.
Yeah.
We are here. We are thankful. If you're not a patron, please consider shooting us a little bit of money for bonus episodes galore.
Yeah, we got a lot.
A lot of back catalog.
Yeah, we were really thinking the other day, like, man, we've been really doing this for a long time, and goddamn, we're tired.
Yeah, it's like 400 episodes.
Yeah, that's a lot of episodes.
Oh, man, I'm like...
Yeah, and 200 of them aren't even out.
Like, that's, I'm like, we need to fucking catch an ET or something soon.
Yeah. I'm driving through bad neighborhoods. I'm just looking for any, because they don't come to my hood. I'm like, I got to go to a different hood, find these fucking aliens.
That's going to get you canceled.
Yeah, that sounded a little racist. I'll delete all that. Don't worry. It's going
to
be fine.
ETs don't go to white neighborhoods.
Yeah, I'm going to delete all that. It's going to be fine. We've already had a lot of beer.
Food's not good there.
Where?
In white neighborhoods.
Oh, absolutely. I'd go where the seasoning is.
Yeah, you go. If you come to this planet, you're not going.
No.
You're not eating small plates.
No, absolutely not.
No, you're going where the good food is.
We're off the rails.
Already. That's how this podcast works. That's why you listen. We're a podcast. Try to keep it fun. We drink beer. We're drinking Hopfly Crunch Time Lager. This is our sponsor. They're out of Rocky Mount, North Carolina.
They make Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. They make delicious beer.
They do. Yeah, we've had a lot of great ones. I don't understand how they do it, honestly. They have 1,000 different beers. I think this might be a secret, and this might be getting us canceled from having a sponsor, but I bet they just put new labels on the same beer.
I don't think that's accurate.
I think you're right, because I still want them to give us beer.
Well, I'll say this. This is not just endemic to them, but like all these different IPAs, it's like all you're doing is really changing the name.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
This one's called Sticky Mitts. Oh, yeah. Wait, no, it's not. What is this?
Yeah, it's called
Sticky Mitts. Okay, nice.
Yeah, like, okay. I get it. You know, usually IPAs have a real violent streak to their names. You ever
they
notice?
Do, yeah.
It's like
yeah.
Death by Hops or
yeah.
Hopsecutioner. Or
yeah, that's true. I like a good peaceful beer.
Shove hops up my ass.
yeah.
Drink it that way.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep drinking them. Keep supplying them. They're great beers. And even if you are just slapping a new name on the same beer, I will never know.
Yeah, it's great. I don't have any problem. Do whatever you want.
It. Yeah.
I mean, but that's my plug for our sponsor.
Perfect. I did a horrible job.
Why is it so hard for us to get sponsors?
It's weird.
Because we're terrible at this.
No idea. No idea.
But other than that, I don't think we have anything else to talk about.
No, I'm
Join
ready to
Join the
get
patron.
Started.
Drink beer.
Yeah.
I smoked a dumpster joint recently.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll be in Florida next week. If you're in Florida, come see me in Tallahassee or Pensacola.
Nice.
I'm headlining 3 shows down there. Other than that, I got nothing else. You're headlining with our friend Mark Brady.
I'm featuring for Mark. This will come out after both of our shows, so hope you were there.
So, fuck you for not showing
sorry,
up,
you missed
assholes.
It was a great time. Probably, it's crazy. I threw so much money into the crowd that they actually yelled stop. Because they're like, we don't even have
I gave everybody
space.
A joint at all my shows. Everybody came.
It was an awesome time.
It was great. Well, then on that note, it's great to bring in our guest.
Absolutely.
Who is joining us remotely via Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
You got to cut this out. I'm belching up. I took a Viagra earlier. I wasn't even going to talk about this.
Yeah, does that cause acid reflux?
I think it does.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm hurting, but I'm sticking it in the pocket.
No, I
of drinking
that.
And bringing in our guest. Very funny guy out of Atlanta, Georgia. Please welcome for the first time a show, Jared Harris. Welcome.
Oh, thank you guys so much.
Yeah. I
appreciate y'all having me on.
Now, you were drinking a cocktail earlier. Is that
yeah,
correct?
I am. I'm like getting super fancy. I'm doing an Aperol Spritz,
ooh.
Which if you order... in more rural parts of the country, they stare at you like,
yeah,
you're just like you're an alien or something.
Spritz, it's the spritz that really,
yeah,
you know,
this guy comes in with his pinkies out. We don't even know how to talk to him. It's crazy.
Spritz, yeah.
Now you're it's my favorite drink though.
It is. What is in an Aperol Spritz?
I think it's just Aperol, bitters, maybe like some bitters, maybe. And
a spritz.
My wife would know. She's
another great comic, Lace Larrabee.
Yeah, she's a bigger alcoholic than me, I think.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's keeping in the family is what we, yeah, what we do.
I don't even know half the shit that's in any of my drinks.
That's what you love.
And when we go out, she orders for me a lot of the time, yeah. And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just I want alcohol, and then she'll just.
When I ordered my first gin and juice, when I was like, what do you want? And I was like, I want a gin and juice. And the guy's like, what kind of juice? And I was like,
that's what juice, the hell? Yeah.
The gin and juice. Juice. Yeah. Whatever the gin and juice is.
Yeah. Snoop Dogg did not specify.
Dude, yeah.
Give me some diabetes, man.
Yeah. I'm just trying to be cool here. So you're in Atlanta, Georgia, but you're not originally from Atlanta, are you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was born like south of Atlanta and just right outside of Columbus at an army base at Fort Benning. But I pretty much like grew up in, I mean, I lived all over, but I grew up just outside of the Atlanta perimeter. And okay. When I say grow up, I think we all kind of refer to like growing up as like where we went to high school.
Yeah, that's kind of what I like to ask people. Where did you live when you graduated high school?
You know? Powder Springs, which is just west of Atlanta.
Yeah. Fort Benning's a pretty big base though, right? Air Force base or Army base?
It's a Army base. It's where they do a Ranger. There's like a Ranger school there, I think. Yeah. I think the Ranger training is real big down there. My dad was a Marine, but like when he got back from Vietnam, he was training, doing something. I don't know exactly what he was doing, but he was doing something with training
with
Army Rangers, which is different
yeah.
but than the Marines. Yeah. But yeah, that's where I was born. I know Atlanta really well because I started comedy in Atlanta too.
Mm. When was that? Did you start?
2000. Right after 9/11. So I just remember it was right after 9/11. Yeah.
You're like, I could join the army or I could bring laughter to the world.
Well, 2001, right? I think that 9/11 happened in 2001.
Yeah.
I should know this since we're on
what America needed right then was.
Yeah. I was like, man, what does the world need right now? They need to hear my.
How old were you then? 2001.
Oh man, I was like 26. I think it was 26 when I started. Yeah, 25 or 26.
It's definitely what America needed was a 25-year-old's opinion on.
Yeah.
World politics. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just like going around me like, man, Building 7 just got scared and fell? What the fuck? it was just nothing made sense. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
And I remember it was pretty, it was kind of a cool story, I guess, for comedy. But a buddy of mine was like really good friends with Stephen Colbert. And Stephen Colbert lived in New York at the time and he was like at the Daily Show. And so he just called Steve, you know, cause he didn't know, like he knew I was like starting in comedy or whatever. So he called Stephen cause they went to college. Well, they went to high school together and college, I guess. He called Stephen and was just like, hey, my buddy's starting comedy. And I'm sure he was just like, Jesus Christ. I gotta fuck with this guy. But he was super cool, super nice. And he would like, you know, really go out of his way to like call me and stuff. Like he would call
Stephen Colbert.
He would call me like after work on his drive to Montclair, New Jersey.
Wow.
And he would just like check in with me and just be like, and I just remember he was such a dork, like very nice, but just a dork. He's just a dorky dad.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? That was just kind of how he was. He was just kind of a dorky dad. And, he would call and he would just be like, I remember he would always say, he would be like, yeah, just go get yourself in trouble. He'd say, go get yourself in trouble. And so that meant like, you know, either go do stand up or, which I didn't really have the balls to do stand up at the time. So I did what a lot of people do. I went and signed up for a fucking an improv class.
Oh yeah,
it was a club. Like, ah, this is kind of like wow. I'm easing into it.
Yeah,
but I went to like two improv classes, and I just realized real quick. I was like, oh, this is just a bunch of actors who don't have the balls to do stand up either.
Yeah,
and so, not shitting on the craft because it's I respect the craft immensely. However. That was kind of what it was.
Yeah.
A lot of people wanted to do stand, but they didn't.
Especially so in those first level classes, too. It's like, that's right. Kind of where
And I was in the very, you know, the beginning class. But it was like a lot of actors, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I went two times, and then I just realized really quick, like, I don't fucking work well with others. Like, So then I started doing stand-up. But what was cool is... and I'll never forget it. Just, he was just so kind and generous with his time. But that was right before he got his, Daily Show, show.
Yeah.
Or not Daily Show show, where, before he went from the Daily Show to his own show. And, I just remember him saying, you know, yeah, my wife's not stoked about it, but you know, cause I'm not going to have much time.
Oh yeah.
And then they're kind of like, kept in touch with him a little bit here and there. I did a meeting with his manager at one point, and it was kind of weird because I'm just sitting in the office. Like, I think I've probably been doing comedy like 2 years at that point, and just didn't know what the fuck I was doing, or even, you know, his manager was just being nice because Steven asked to meet with me. Just like, so what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm doing open mics and stuff in Atlanta. Well, there's not really any open mics. I just do, you know, there's like a black room that I used to do in Atlanta like every Tuesday night. That was pretty much it. That was the only place I could go on stage. So yeah, it was just funny because he was just looking at me like, yeah, I don't, like, he wasn't saying it, but I could tell he's just like, I don't know why the fuck you're in my office right now. I'm just literally, I make money off Steven and you're here, and I'm just gonna try to be cordial.
Yeah.
And when you leave, you know, you've got good this is fucking luck, buddy. But I'll never forget the kindness though.
That's great.
Yeah, to do that.
Yeah, so you mentioned to Shane that along with meeting Stephen Colbert and taking up his manager's precious time, you've also had a number of what you might describe as paranormal or at least strange experiences, including an out-of-body experiences.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Was that pre-comedy or post-comedy?
That's all pre-comedy.
So comedy kind of cured you of...
I think, I don't know if it's that I was cured so much of, it's more like I just had an open, I kind of look at it like it's a frequency band you're more in tune with. Mm. And then there's things that I feel, at least from what I've read a decent amount, not, you know, an expert on it, but alcohol will definitely hinder that ability. Any sort of drugs,
yeah,
really, in general,
yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah, so like Viagra, you know,
terrible for my yeah.
I saw the ghost until I took a blue pill, and then I poked into their world instead.
I didn't even get a hard on, but I got one hell of a headache,
I
think just things like that. And then when I started comedy, I was drinking quite a bit just because I was just drinking. You know, I didn't know what I was doing, and you know, you don't know what you're doing, and you're just trying to figure things out, and then that's generally how your, you know, alcoholism starts. But I was just doing a lot of that, so I didn't really, I guess, you know, by choice too. Like I didn't, because I had insomnia really bad from an early age, and a lot of that insomnia stems from these kind of these paranormal that I had, because I had them from like a very early age, like as young as I can remember.
What was your first paranormal experience?
I think the very first thing was, I mean, I was having out-of-body experiences at a very, very early, so like maybe as far back as my memory can go, 3-4.
Wow.
Were you seeing a corporeal form emerge? Like, could you, were you conscious of the fact, or were you, you know, at, in your the astral plane or wherever you were you seeing yourself sleeping and being like,
no, oh. not at that age, that those younger ages. I was doing a lot of scaring my mom because like, I remember I would make references to like a past life of, I was really into like, World War II fighter planes.
Oh, interesting.
Very, very heavily into World War II fighter planes and just infatuated with them from a very, very early age. And just whenever I always wanted to go to a bookstore just so I could, I would go, I'd find where all the, you know, the history section and, particularly World War II. I don't know why that was exactly. But I remember, and I don't remember what it was I said, but I scared the shit out of my mom because I basically alluded to the, it was something that I said that basically scared her because she was like, well, there's no way he would know this unless he lived.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Live wow. a prior life. And,
wow.
So yeah, but, the out of body experiences and the vibrational state and the disconnecting from the body and the sleep paralysis and all that stuff was so normal and natural to me. Like, it didn't really freak me out. And then years later, I guess I was probably in my 20s. So early 20s, cause this would have been before comedy. So early 20s, I was working at the Four Seasons parking cars. I worked the third shift, so I would get there at like 11. I'd work till like 7 a.m. And so I would listen to Art Bell, Coast to Coast on, you know, AM. And you know, it was so frustrating. It's just so funny back then, because, you know, back then it's like there wasn't, you couldn't just stream some shit. It was like if somebody interrupted you during the show, you're fucked.
Right.
A car is coming in. You know what I mean? Like, damn, I gotta go park his car. So you'd miss like, you know, important parts of the show. But that was like kind of my first time of really understanding that what was happening to me was, I guess, kind of unique, but also just hearing other people talk about those experiences, it kind of made me even more intrigued, because I would hear these people talking about having these experiences, and then I would just sit back and be like, well, shit, you know, I know I can do this. And really at that time I kind of could at will. I could just not like at will, meaning like, you know, like a Buddhist monk or something, right, but like I could make it a priority and be like, okay, I'm going to try to leave my body this week or something. Right, so it would be in the back of my mind. And then as I would go to sleep, whatever. Well, I heard an interview on Art Bell with Dr. Monroe, who started the Monroe Institute.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we spoke to him many times.
We talked to him a lot, or talked about him a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. And that was the first time obviously I'd heard of him. And it was just interesting because he was talking about, and I don't know if it was Dr. Monroe that was on the show or it was somebody else who teaches at the Monroe Institute, because I remember I bought a book. I think it was called Journeys Out of the Body, or it was something like that. Don't hold me to it. Mm-hmm. But I remember getting that book and reading it because I had heard the guy on Art Bell show.
Okay.
And so he basically laid out like essentially how to do it. And so, yeah, I just kind of use those methods. And yeah. And then I would have, I mean, it would just, it would start that, but then I started getting scared.
Oh, right.
Because I guess when you start to hear that other people are doing it and they're making a big deal, or other people are making a big deal about it, then it kind of, it made it seem not as natural, like something maybe like either something's wrong with me or I'm special in some way or, you know what I mean? Because it was like, being on the Art Bell show, it came across as kind of like, you know, fringe. Everything was just, sure. you know, everything he had on there was just like fringe weird, subject yeah. matter. And yeah, so yeah. it kind of put like, I don't know the right word I'm looking for, but it just made it seem like more of a big deal.
Right.
Whereas
yeah.
before, I wouldn't question it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's, I'd just be like, oh, yeah, sleep paralysis. Like, I didn't even have a word for what I was sure. having. Like, it was sleep paralysis, but it didn't really freak me out.
Right. It's almost like so, how parents are like, when your kid falls, it's like, don't make a big deal out of it and they won't cry.
Exactly.
It's like, but yeah, the minute you tell them that that's weird, then they're like, oh, I got to cry every time I fucking do anything.
That's a perfect analogy. Yeah. yeah. And so, yeah, that, I mean, that was,
what's the typical out of body or, you know, the experience when you, that you're having at this point that you can have if you will yourself to do it?
Yeah. So with me, and it's a little different for people, you know, different people that they have a little different, experience with it. Some people, really experience the sleep paralysis situation, but for me, what would happen was I would get this kind of, tingly sensation in the back of my neck, almost like when you're cold and you just kind of, you know, it would start that way, and then it would just kind of like permeate down my spine, and this is all like while laying in bed, and typically this would be I don't know what the state of consciousness is for this, but it's generally like very, very early in the morning.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Typically if you typically wake up at 7 a.m., this would be like a 4 a.m.
Yeah.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I had to wake up and go pee and then I'm going back to bed. Well, as I'm falling back to sleep, that's when this stuff would start to happen.
Absolutely.
So whatever state of consciousness that is, I don't know.
Yeah. Data. They call it the phase. There's a guy, there's a great, I've talked about it a bunch on the pod. There's a YouTube series called How to Leave Your Body in 3 Days. And there's a guy that's just figured out that, yeah, I'll send you the links for all this, but he says that's the exact time. It's great that you're saying this. That's the exact time. He's like, if you typically wake up at, you know, 7 or whatever, we oftentimes, I wake up at 5 all the time and I lay in bed for 2 hours just with my mind awake. And he's like, that's the right time. Go pee or do whatever you have to do. Or, and then he has like 3 exercises you constantly do in your head to get in that state. And so the fact that you did that on your own as a younger person, and this guy is teaching people that stuff later, is amazing to me. So like, that's exactly right. It's like that, they called it the phase, and he's like, it's this twilight, section of, nighttime that's when all the quote unquote abductions happen, with UFO stuff. It's all when out of body experiences happen. It's just this weird, like, it's almost when shit gets a little weird, and it's always, it's just when everyone's just in that weird headspace, and
it's
that's
a little
when
different brainwave activity.
Yeah, going on absolutely. There
too. Theta definitely. Waves versus alpha waves, and
that's all stuff that I just never knew, you know. Yeah. But later in life, I found out. But to get back to just like how it would start with me, it would be like that tingling sensation, and you know, being younger, I kind of liked the way that felt. It just would, you know, just felt,
tingles good when you're young.
Yeah.
Now you got to take pills for that.
I didn't, no pills needed. For that. So that would kind of start with that. And then I would start to get this, kind of a heaviness, I guess, in my whole body, where it's like, I just feel like a best way I can describe it, like a weighted blanket has just been put over the top of you. And you're just like, at some point you're like, you know, move your arm. And it's like your brain's saying to move your arm's not moving. Mm. While simultaneously, like, there's this, frequency band, and it's like, you can not just hear it, but you can feel it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like your whole body vibrates.
Yeah, it was kind of like a, it ends up getting that way. But to start, it's like I said, it starts with that tingling. Mm-hmm. And at that tingling, I think, is just like the beginning stages of this frequency that gets more and more prevalent. And so to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, like, let's say that, like, especially when I was in high school, I would have my whole thing was, in middle school, it was like I would have, you know, a tape deck, and I would just like, you know, I'd have songs on there, and I would you know, back in the day, you'd like rewind and you'd count and you'd be like, I want to get to the beginning of my song. Yeah. So I would go to sleep like with like a tape plan. And it's almost like the best way to describe it is like, as this stuff's happening, it's like your ear, the like sound starts to go away. Like you don't have, like you don't hear anything that's going on in your current reality. That stuff kind of starts to go away, and it's almost like, you know, if you were to stick your finger in your ear slowly and then just slowly, slowly, slowly until it's just completely all sound is gone. And as that's happening, the vibration gets more and more intense. And that frequency gets just almost, some people experience a rumbling. I never had that rumbling experience, but I have more of a, an audible, like,
oh yeah.
And then when it gets to that point, it's like you're completely paralyzed. And then my awareness, I would put my awareness somewhere else, and it could be, you know, wherever, I don't know. It could be in the freaking, you know, at that time, who knows what I was thinking about, right. But like, you know, just somewhere else. And so the combination of that stuff and also just not getting freaked out.
Yeah. Or that's the biggest thing.
When I was younger, I wouldn't get freaked out by it because it was so natural to me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it kind of get a little tainted when you start to hear other people talking about it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but yeah, so I'd have my awareness somewhere else. And then you start to kind of disconnect at that point. And some people literally, it's just like a little just pop right out.
Yeah,
some people, it's like a very slow, like for me, it's like a slow process of almost like my energy body, like is lifting up out of my body. Mm-hmm. And that's how it was always for me. I've heard people say, oh, next thing I know, I'm up above myself looking down at myself. I never really looked down at myself. Okay. I never really had that experience where I would just be looking at me per se. But as a little kid, I would definitely, people would just enter what I thought was my room. But really what I was seeing, I think, and I'm trying to just make sense of all this now, but it's like we have this physical dense reality, and then just outside of that, I remember seeing like certain pieces of furniture in the house, you know, just things that, like, it's like you would touch it with, because you still feel like you have a physical body.
Sure. Yeah.
Or at least you see yourself in that way. Mm-hmm. And like, I just remember like everything would, it was like it was resonating at a different frequency, and you'd feel it.
Oh,
like you could put your hand on a, like, you know, some chest of drawers or something, you know, and it just, it's like it's there, but it's also the other thing I realized too, it's not the exact same as this reality.
Exactly.
Like things are just slightly off.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's just like this other parallel reality where everything's not the exact same.
Mm-hmm.
It's like slightly different. I don't know. I can't tell you. I can't explain why that is.
Do you find colors were brighter or different? Like shit seemed more real than real? Because that's one of the common themes is people like, colors are brighter. It felt more real than where my real life is. Or was it just another place you went to?
Really just more because with my OBEs were never like if I did travel to a place, I wouldn't remember the process of getting to that place, if this makes any sense. So like it was very much localized to wherever I was, like if I was in a house, you know, and I don't know if it's just that my mind just blocked it out, and maybe, you know, I'm sure I probably did block it out, but I would definitely, as soon as I made that disconnection, I would start to I would see people. There's an old woman that I would see all the time when I was really little.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't really know who it was, but it was my great grandmother who raised me. Well, I'll say she raised me. She took care of me when I was really, really little. I think she died when I was like four, mm-hmm. I want to say, but I would see her quite a bit. And it was weird because when I would see her, she would always be, in the form that I knew her, like, mm-hmm. you know, and she was old,
right.
but glowing and like very, kind of, I would only just see her face though.
Oh, interesting.
Her face and her hair.
Mm-hmm. And you,
never really saw the body.
And were you lucid dreaming by chance, or have you lucid dreamed and this is a distinct experience separate from that?
I've never had I've wanted to lucid dream, but I've never been able to do a lucid dream.
Right.
What I have done though is, and this is even probably, this could literally be a whole other podcast, but I have had two, most recently, I've had two encounters where I would be kind of like what you hear a lot of near-death experiencers talk about, how they're floating above.
Oh, yeah.
And they see themselves. Mm-hmm. Well, I've had two of those experiences where I've seen myself in a different reality. I know it's me because I'm literally feeling all the emotions that I'm feeling at that moment. And it's very mundane stuff. Like,
right.
One of them was really stupid. It's like, I just saw myself walking down a long driveway to go get the mail. And I remember it's kind of a long driveway. Bunch of trees over the driveway. It was kind of shaded. And then there's like a big staircase going up to a front porch. And I remember just seeing myself, just observing myself. And I'm older. I probably was in my 60s maybe. And I was just really sad.
Oh, no.
Walking up the stairs, walking into the living room, and just feeling insanely lonely and just sad. And I remember just sitting down. I put the mail down on the counter in the kitchen, and then I sat down in a recliner and I turned on the TV. Oh, and it was just me kind of observing that. And then I was gone. I was out of there.
Yeah. Hmm.
And then I had another situation where I was observing myself in a major city. I don't know what city it was, but I'm a comic and I'm in a major city and I'm running late for a show and I'm kind of stressed out about it. And I'm running down these little stairwell. And as I'm going down the stairwell, I see a poster and it's like, I'm on the poster. So it's like, you know, it was just weird. And then I walk into a bar and then I'm out.
Hmm.
It's
interesting,
but it's real. It's like,
sure,
you're seeing an alternate universe where you're in it, or is that show? Is that show something that has come true that you were like, oh, this is what I was seeing that night?
No, it wasn't like a deja vu type thing. It was very much like me looking in on me, in a different reality.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wow.
The timeline though, it seems kind of similar. Like it's definitely modern times, like cars, houses, all big city, all that stuff,
comedy.
The noise, like everything. Like it's not like, it wasn't like I'm peeping in on like a previous lifetime or didn't seem that way.
And you don't think this is your future? This is definitely a different reality. It couldn't be your current reality. I mean, based on, you know, your comedic, goals or things like that. It's, but you know, or
how'd you look goals? On the poster? Did you look older or younger, or
you look good?
I didn't really acknowledge the poster that much. Only that I was looking at a poster and I knew, and it had my information on there. I don't remember seeing like a headshot or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like, it's kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's just when you are having those experiences and you're outside this reality, those things don't seem important, maybe. I don't know. I don't really have the answers to, as to why. Because, you know, like right now talking, if I were to be, to go back, I would be like, oh, man, I need to, you know, I need to figure all this out.
Yeah. In the moment, it doesn't seem
maybe
like
in the moment, you know, maybe it's not, it doesn't even seem important because maybe that's a reality that I'm, maybe I'm in that observer state so much and I'm not even aware of it. So when I am in that, when I do, when I did catch that glimpse of me, I guess being in that state of awareness, like it just didn't seem important.
Yeah. It's almost like whether it was your current reality or a different reality, that what you were observing was so commonplace that it was not out of the ordinary for you to be like, oh, that's weird. It was more just like, that's my life. This is like, that makes sense. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like kind of like, it's the same way you forget drives home because you're like, you've done it so much. And it's like, I didn't notice it because it's commonplace.
And it's very mundane. Like I'm a little leery sometimes when I hear people with these fantastical stories of like, you know, oh, and I saw Jesus and we talked, you know, and I high-fived him and we had a beer or whatever, you know, I don't, it's like, cause from my experience, like all of this stuff, this supernatural stuff is pretty mundane in terms of the OBE stuff. Mm-hmm. Now I will say like the very first time that I really, cause I was 14 years old, I was really confused about a lot of shit because I grew up in a really just a rough, I grew up really rough. A lot of like just tragedy and a lot of just bad stuff in general. And I grew up kind of, like my family was Southern Baptist. I just would go to church here and there, but I never, none of that ever really resonated with me. Mm-hmm. And I remember my grandfather passed away when I was 14. So I was really close with my grandfather. He was like pretty much like my father figure at the time. And so when he passed away, the night he passed away, I remember I didn't get to the hospital in time to say goodbye, like a final goodbye. And so that night I was like laying in bed and there's no TV on. There's no lights, no nothing, literally nothing. Mm-hmm. Just my window was open and a little bit of moonlight coming in. That was about it. Mm-hmm. But I remember just sitting there in the bed and the lights are all, you know, like I said, and you know how it is, like when you've been sitting in the dark for a while, your eyes are adjusted. You know, it's not like turning the lights off and then you blink your eyes and then there's like still, you know, it wasn't like that. I mean, I've been sitting there for a while and I was thinking about him heavily and I thought to myself, I said, you know, in my own way, I didn't even really think in terms of like, I hope he gets this or anything like that. I just said, I love you. And immediately when I said, I love you, a ball, and I mean a ball of energy, like light, just exactly where I was looking. And it flashed three times. And when it flashed three times, it wasn't anything audible, but it was like telepathic.
Yeah.
It was instant telepathic communication. He said, I love you. Yeah. I knew it was him.
Yeah.
And immediate. And then that ball of light, it just went gone right out the window.
Wild. That's amazing.
And my uncle, who, it's another wild story, who later died at an Eagles concert in the bathroom.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
We all have an uncle like that. I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was him, or it was either him or one of my cousins. They had a visitation from him that night, too. And then my aunt also, who later, a whole nother story, she committed suicide in our driveway. That was years later. She got a visitation from him. My mom had some sort of a thing as well, but I can't remember what it was. and my grandmother also. So yeah, it was kind of like maybe he was just making the rounds.
Yeah. Wow.
And so for me at that time at 14, I wasn't religious. Mm-hmm. I was just confused.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got it. These people that I didn't trust telling me, you know, how to think and mm-hmm. what to believe in. And I just didn't feel right about any of that. So I was just really confused. And I was very agnostic, I guess, at that time. Because mm-hmm. I never really thought like about the metaphysical stuff of the OBEs and all that stuff. It didn't really, because at that time I'm 14, you know.
Yeah.
Later on when I'm hearing this podcast, or not podcast, but the Art Bell show, I'm, you know, it's in my 20s.
Yeah.
Way before all that stuff. But that really kind of started a process that I went through for years of, I don't say a process, but a series of wild, wild shit. Yeah, dude, I can tell you tons more stories. But
that's wild, yeah.
That was the first one, though.
Wild, man.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm interested if you've, you know, worked through this in your head. I'm assuming that you have, because you're a comic and it's just the nature of comedy. But do you think that your experiences are, I mean, I guess they could just be anomalous experiences. Do you think, but more likely, are they something that genetically somehow, like certain people are predisposed because of some sort of brain wiring to have these experiences? Or do you think these experiences are essentially available through, you know, the right training? In a way, like, some people can play the piano when they're children, just naturally. Some people can learn it quicker than others, but most of us can learn it if we're willing to, like, put the work in.
Yeah.
So do you think it's something like a learned skill, or do you think it's just something that's kind of will of the wisp? You're just lucky that, you know, your brain's wired in such a way these things happen to you.
I think it's now at 47, I'm pretty confident that it's something that we all have. Yeah. It's an ability that we all have. I think, and the reason I say that is because I'll go back, I'll look at like that Pulitzer Prize winning photo from Vietnam of that Buddhist monk that emulated.
Yeah. So,
you know, that is something that we all should remember or know about if people don't know about it. Because really, that is the most empowering thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Mm. To be able to transcend this reality to that point and do it like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that monk literally decided, yeah, I'm done here, and I'm gone. And then literally left like that. It was gone. He was out of the body.
Yeah.
In his body, experiencing being burned alive.
Yeah. No facial grimace, no nothing. He was just like, this is it.
Yeah, this is it. I'm just,
yeah.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
So go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I that really kind of opened my mind up more to, you know, which is probably why I view things the way that I do, because of all these experiences, you know. Right. But yeah, I think we all possess that. And I think it gets exponentially harder, I think, the older you get, because you're basically controlled. I mean, we are controlled essentially by fear.
Yes.
We are constantly bombarded with fear. Mm-hmm. We're constantly, as from the time you're young to, you know, to your 20, you are constantly being told you can't do this. You can't, no, that's not, you know, that's only, there's so many things that you're said that you're told that you can't do. And then, you know, you believe it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, like it's who was the, was it Goebbels, the Nazi propagandist that said, if you repeat a lie over and over again, it'll just become truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's shit that look at what the military, you take a bunch of young Marines it's 17, 18 years old.
Yeah.
Put them in boot camp for 6 weeks. You break them down psychology, tell them that they're nothing, that they have no identity. Then they come out molded exactly what they want.
Right. Just like Fox News, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much.
All news for that.
Yeah, all news, really. But yeah. I mean, Fox is the worst. But I mean, they're all bad. Right. But yeah, they all like find a way to like scare us and break us down into believing a thing. And it's like, if you are more worried about the outside, you can't focus on what's happening inside, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's obviously when we kind of, I think a lot of us know, so we know that it's profit driven.
Yeah.
I think there's a large portion of the population though, that just does not want to know. They don't want to know the truth.
Right. Yeah.
The truth is very fucking disturbing and scary to people. And that's just the world we live in. Like, some people can handle it and some people can't.
Yeah.
So, you know, just, it's, you know, psychology 101, like people will literally go out of their way to try to rationalize why some crazy shit's being done.
Yeah.
Oh no, it can't be that. It can't, you know,
like, yeah.
Really, it's very simplistic a lot of times. It's like, no, yeah, there are people profiting off of
It's always just money.
Right. Where you don't make rational decisions and you do fucking crazy shit that in retrospect, maybe 10 years down the road, you'd be like, holy fuck, I got corralled into thinking this way.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I guess that's sort of where my question was driven about. If you're genetically predisposed or you say you think this is available to everyone. And I guess my follow-up to that, based on what you just said, is, you know, is the notion that this ability to see a reality that is perhaps difficult or challenging to see, are there forces out there that need to prevent us from, you know, developing that ability to our fullest for some ulterior motive, whether that's power or money? Let me put it this way. It's like, you know, you grow up and you play basketball, and at some point somebody says, you're not good enough. Mm-hmm. You're never going to be good at basketball. You're never going to make it, right? So you give it up, and then at some point you just go into your regular job and you live your just shitty life, and you're just like this, you know, and I'm not knocking you if you live a shitty life. I live a shitty life.
Yeah, we all have a shitty life.
But it, you know, if you're this person here, like, you know, I was having these experiences where I could, you know, lucid dream or astral project or out of body experiences. But at some point, people are like, you need to just sort of plug back into the matrix, so to speak, and forget about all of that. Because if the masses of people, for lack of a better word, awoke to this, it would threaten the very stability of this world we live in. I mean, do you have some variation where that makes things make sense to you?
I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense to me, because just on a, you know, small level, like, I mean, you know, your employer, but employers do the same thing. Like, it's like, if, you know, you're working for a company and you're like telling your boss, well, yeah, I want to go start my own thing. You know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to fucking do whatever they can to knock you down.
Yeah,
to,
sure. Right.
You know, you can't do that. There's always some sort of ulterior motive. And I think, like, if I were a power structure, I would 100%, I mean, I'm going to say if I were, because I wouldn't do this, but I'm just saying, like, I think it's very reasonable to think that power structures would want to keep people divided so that they can maintain power. You can't maintain power if everybody fucking agrees that you're right. Fucking problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Right. When everybody goes, this motherfucker has no power over us. There's millions of us. Mm-hmm. This little motherfucker's. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't have them think that.
Yeah.
So you see it all the time. And I mean, y'all have probably seen the videos of these events that happen, and then miraculously somehow all these news stations around the world have the exact same script.
Yeah.
And they read the exact same script, mm-hmm. the exact same narrative, literally to the T, sure. the words.
Yeah, it's wild.
And it all comes out that night. Yeah. I remember watching that happen when 9/11 happened.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just going to bring that up.
I remember watching a broadcast with a bunch of firefighters who came out of building, I forgot which building it was, but they were talking about the multiple explosions.
Popping explosions. Yeah. It sounded like controlled demolition.
Can't fucking find that shit anymore. Yeah,
contemporaneous explanations of 9/11 versus the news report.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, it's crazy. You know, it's the whole thing with the diplomat's daughter going, you know, like crying, like they were putting the babies in the incubator, and I could literally spend hours probably talking about all of the things that later were unequivocally not true,
right? Yeah,
fact. But the thing is, humans have amnesia; like we don't remember,
right?
Mm-hmm. And power structures know that. They know that we don't, like, 10 years from now, you'll have a whole new generation of people who have been, steered in a particular direction and to think a certain way.
Yeah, and then they'll have their own 9/11 or whatever it is, and then they just keep repeating the cycle to where, like, oh, we'll get them complacent, follow the rules, then we'll have this event to bring – they're getting out of control. Let's have this event to bring them together, and then we'll do this again. It's crazy, yeah.
Well, the weaponization of the term conspiracy theory.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It was weaponized.
Absolutely.
For a reason, because it's a way to thwart off any sort of debate, mm-hmm. because you can just go, whatever, crackpot, you know, you're a conspiracy theorist, and then just shut it down.
Yeah.
Well, now you don't have to debate that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now we live in this society where I never thought we would get here this quick, where literally power structures are just completely shutting down debate.
Oh,
there is no debate. We regurgitate a lie or a talking point,
mm-hmm.
and we do it enough, and you literally watch people fall in line with it.
Yeah.
Because I think there's two types of people in this world. There's more of a collectivist type of mentality where it's like, you know, everybody means well. They want good for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, shit just doesn't work that way, unfortunately. Yeah. Not, I mean, you're talking about, you know, we're in like the last stages of crony capitalism.
Yeah.
We're not going to have this fucking world that I know a lot of people want. I want it. Y'all want it. Most everybody does.
Yeah.
But there's more of the collectivist mentality. And then there's also the people that I kind of find myself as just like one of these people, like, I'm just like, leave me the fuck alone. Like, I'll leave people alone. Y'all leave me the fuck alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't we just all just get along? You think differently about this. You think differently about this. I see it a certain way. You see it a certain way. We used to have no problems. Like, you could just go, you know, have dinner with people and be friends with people. Now it's like, who's perpetuated all of this divide?
Mm-hmm.
I remember listening to a very interesting podcast back in 2014 with, you can't find this anywhere. I mean, I wish I could find it. But it was, trying to think of the guy's name. He was the biggest news aggregator at the time. Drudge.
Oh, yeah, Drudge Report, yeah.
Yeah, so you remember that time frame where the Drudge Report was just like, I mean, that it was kind of a right, center right kind of perspective, but you know, it kind of started leaning a little more left near the end. Either way, he was the biggest news aggregator at the time, and pre-social media. I'll say pre-social media, beginning stages.
Sure, sure.
So just keep this in mind. 2014, he goes on a podcast, and this is a guy who never really – he's very immersed in the who's who of media, right? He had just gone to a big dinner of all the top echelon of media, which obviously, you know, just keeps, it was mainstream media has gotten more and more condensed, you know, to mm-hmm. a small number of people who control narratives now. But he said, I'm doing this podcast because I just want to be able to sleep at night and just know that I did what I, you know,
oh, yeah, yeah.
tried to tell people. yeah. And so 2014, he says that the topic of conversation was love him or hate him, Alex Jones.
Right.
He was the topic of conversation. And they said, we're going to take down Alex Jones. And then once we take down Alex Jones, we're going to start taking down other dissenting voices. And they would do it by creating internet ghettos, which at the time I didn't really understand what any of this meant, because you got to think social media wasn't really prevalent like it is. It didn't have the kind of influence that it has now. But their whole, I mean, they literally, he talked about the whole fucking thing. Like, it's like, we're going to take down dissenting voices. We're going to create these internet ghettos where you have right and left who get informational feedback loop, confirmation bias.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And so the way that the algorithms are designed basically will be that you'll keep these people divided, because whenever you bring up a topic, and let's say it's a right-leaning person,
sure.
they go look at, you know, whatever shit
that's following. What about Hillary? What about Trump? What about
Biden? And all it does is give them confirmation bias, and then the left-leaning person is doing the same exact thing. But this is all, what he said was all by design to basically divide people.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't elaborate on why he didn't, you know, I mean, I'm sure that didn't even
sells more involved. Ads. I mean, you get it, like the whole reason, funny. Like once you have an audience that's very funny, pointed towards one thing, you can sell specific ads. Like the hardest thing as a marketer is figuring out your audience. But once you have an audience that you know who they are, you got them, you know?
Exactly.
So it's like, it's all about ad revenue. It's all about selling shit. So yeah, I mean,
think of, and y'all know this. I know y'all know this. Like, think of how many headlines you've seen, sensational headlines that are 100% false.
Oh yeah.
And then you go read, and then you get to the bottom, and then they literally will say how it's not true.
yeah.
But it doesn't matter because they already
know the headline. The headline is the thing.
And how many of us just read headlines? Like that's
the problem. Yeah. But the problem is that you have a whole generation of people now who have literally been brought up on sensational headlines that are not fucking true.
Yeah.
And that is to them, that is fact.
That's news. Yeah. That's news.
Right. But I think to sort of, and I'm not really saying anything new. What I'm doing is tying some things in together is that by creating a system where people look at headlines and, you know, something that you might see on Facebook and just sort of scroll through is as valid to most people as a journalist who spent 3 years researching something and it finally makes it in the New York Times. Those things are equally valid in this world.
Yes, because they play in the same space.
Right, right. And but what they do is they create...
Same space meaning the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Right.
Totally.
And it turns us in, and I love this term, and it was introduced to me relatively recently. It turns us into sea lions, where we're just... we're not really saying anything. You're just being noisy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which that sort of red, blue, Democrat, Republican, lib, conservative, that continuous fight. It's like, let's just keep them arguing about this, and no one will really know what's really going on behind the curtain.
Yeah. I mean, Senator, have you seen Senator Jeff Jackson's thing? So Senator Jeff Jackson is he a senator?
In
North Carolina, but out of the Charlotte district.
Yes.
He posted a thing on Reddit not too long ago. I've spent a decent amount of time here, and what I've noticed is that the people that are the most vocal in saying the craziest things are only saying it as an audition to get on shows. He goes, they actually will act totally normal in a closed meeting where there's no cameras or there's nobody there.
Interesting.
But he goes, the minute that the cameras are on, they're like, oh, we gotta just be loud and sound angry so that these shows will pick us up, whether it's on, you know, Newsmax, Fox News, or all, you know, both, whatever side it is.
Yeah, they want the sound bite.
Exactly. And so he posted that, and then Newsmax immediately was like, this guy sucks. So, like, they just bought into his, like, whole thing. And they're like, this guy's – and, like, they took the bait. It was so amazing. This guy's great. I love this guy. Not trying to promote politics, but it was just – he's just so calm, and his demeanor is just like, let's just talk like normal people. And they're like, who's going to talk like normal people? This guy sucks. And it's like, I told you, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just – it's unfortunate that, like, these career – that you have career politicians.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why the fuck is – you know – how do any of these politicians have $100 million?
It's insane.
$20 million. They shouldn't. You can't. You don't get paid enough to have that kind of money.
Yeah.
No, you get you don't get paid enough on your salary.
Indirectly. Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
But you get paid. Indirectly. You definitely get paid enough.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not. You ostensibly, roughly 550 people run this country. The federal government is run by roughly 550 people.
That's wild.
And if you're worth $1 billion, and we know that the 90% of the wealth in this country is held by a few thousand people, it's a pretty simple equation to say, I need as many of those 535 people to know my name.
Mm-hmm.
I need them to know what I want. I don't necessarily need to say, I'll give you X number of dollars for this result. I just need to be able to, it's sort of like getting booked at a comedy club.
Yeah.
Right.
Just show up and hang and they'll be like
I just
need,
I just want to know your name. I want you to know who I am. I don't want you to know what I'm trying to do. And I know that's how it works out. But you do that with roughly 550 people in the world through money.
Yeah.
The same parties, the same things. And for everybody else, for the other 90% of the, and there are some tiers to how I think you keep people in line. But for the most part, you know, you keep the poor the same way the poor have always been kept in line. Mm-hmm. You know, bread and circuses. You keep them entertained.
Yeah.
And the middle class, as long as they're fighting, thinking that somehow, and not taking a stance on reproductive rights, but as long as, like, we think that, like, the abortion fight is the most critical thing in our lives.
Sure.
That's, in my mind, a great distraction from reality, which is it's the people that decide whether reproductive rights, you know, that are the problem, not the actual outcome of it.
Yeah. To speak to that, on NPR the other day, I mentioned this on the last podcast, but someone at NPR said, you know, everyone's up in arms about drag shows. It's going to go away the minute the election's over. They're like, they're fighting against you right now, but it's only to keep in the news. They're like, the minute that's over, they're not going to give a shit the fact that the drag show's happening. It's all for show.
That's a prime example of just, like, the power that these corporate media outlets have.
Yeah.
And even, like, all the independent media now, too, it's like they're subservient to the algorithm.
Yeah.
So all of them are competing for sensational headlines. And so it's, you know, it's so typical how it's like, you know, a left-wing outlet will find the dumbest right-wing person they can find and put them on a platform to be like, see how fucking retarded.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right-wingers are. And right-wingers will do the same thing constantly with, you know, this is why everybody uses the term, you know, woke ad nauseum now, because a lot of these right-wing outlets, they'll showcase the worst, the most, the loudest, most obnoxious.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, we got idiots on both sides, but they just keep highlighting those people. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've
annoying
got, like,
comment just, girl. That's what we called her in college. It's like that annoying comment girl that, like, no matter what the professor said, she was like, well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you read so-and-so, you would, and you're like, oh, God.
Yeah, we had that guy in my art history class. His name was Remy, and he's like, but how does DMT or ecstasy address this art history? And we're like, shut up, Remy. Yeah. Stop being that guy. Like, just listen
but
to
you know, but you notice, like, how every time they have a new thing to exploit, whether it be COVID or, you know, war, whatever. Yeah. At the end of all of that, there's just more consolidation of power and
absolutely
more money.
Absolutely.
Look how, I mean, have y'all looked up how much money was made over COVID?
Oh, it's so crazy.
By a very small number of people. COVID was the single biggest transfer of wealth in American history.
It was. It absolutely was. And before that, I think it was up to that point. I think it was it was after 9/11. I think.
Yeah.
Military industrial complex milked that war for I mean, 20 something years.
Yeah.
We still have troops all over the place.
Yeah. Right. I think it takes a couple generations, like 20 years, for people to be like, what are we doing this for? Like, the young people are like, what is this about? Yeah. And they're like, okay, we got to find something else. We got to clear they're over this one. So let's just,
That's why time is, I mean, they love time because they've got all the money. I mean, they get the bank, they get the central banks give them money for practically nothing, free money.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're where everybody else is screaming at each other over masks or, you know, what, I mean, you look at the people that literally orchestrated the whole fucking thing. They're the ones that came out on top. They're the ones that bought the fucking vaccine stocks.
Oh, yeah.
Right before. And then now they're fucking shitting on.
Sold their hotel stocks and bought stocks in the vaccine companies.
100%.
Yeah.
And the whole time you're just going, God damn it. We literally just fucking went through all this shit. And like 9/11.
Yeah.
Sold their airplane stocks.
Just went through this whole thing. Yeah. But now you've got a whole new generation of people who didn't experience that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, I remember just how fucking irritated I was with, I'm a very moderate person politically, but dude, I would get so fucking mad because I would drive around, you know, living in like metro Atlanta. This is like right after 9/11 and all the fucking, like, I remember watching Bush Jr. go on TV and go, you're either with us or you're against us.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, so you're saying you're a terrorist if you question what the fuck you're saying, you're a goddamn terrorist. And people just, they, exactly what they did with COVID. They literally got scared. They scared the shit out of everybody. And then they fucking started acting irrationally. And then the next thing you know, I'm seeing thousands of, at the time it was the fucking Tahoes. Fucking Tahoe. They had a Tahoe with a Bush sticker and a fucking, you know, 9/11 sticker. And it was just like, go get the terrorist. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like, and then I would like, oh God, I got to get the fuck away from these people. I'm going to go to New York or whatever. And then I go to New York years later. I go to New York and I'm like living in Queens, Astoria, Queens. And I'm doing shows in Brooklyn and stuff. And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. Holy shit. It's like the polar opposite of batshit crazy. I go to LA and then it's like literally more batshit crazy. And it's just like, everybody's fucking crazy. And I'm just like,
let me ask you a hypothetical on this note. Cause I've often wondered this and I've never asked anybody, but so if Clinton had won the election 2016 and pandemic had happened and her response had been the same as Trump, right? Like she hadn't taken a different course, which I don't think her response would have been that different than Trump. I think Fauci would still be around, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I've often wondered if Republican or conservatives would have been the mask people.
Oh,
like we should be masking this.
100%.
And then the other side would have been
They started doing that under Trump.
Right.
Oh,
that's
that's
just how, I mean, it's just, it's fucking, it's so wild, dude. I remember literally watching that motherfucker, like, I'm not a Trump fan. I've never been a Trump fan. I was never a Trump fan before he went in office and you know, he did nothing, in my opinion, except for further divide. Obama did a great job at dividing the fuck out of people as well.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
It's that suit, that tan suit, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he just, I remember when Trump started the whole shit about the vaccines and stuff. And I just remember thinking, you know, and I remember watching like a lot of people say, a lot of people on the left going, I'm not going to take that vaccine. Mm-hmm. And then you see it shift from, I'm not going to take that vaccine, I don't trust that vaccine, to literally going, you're the fucking devil if you don't get a vaccine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What the fuck are you? Also, you should be punished by, you know, you should go to prison if you don't take a vaccine. Right. I mean,
yeah,
it literally shifted from that. And you're just going.
Yeah, people that were friends of mine that are extremely.
Yeah, it was wild.
Sort of liberal, almost on the crunchy granola hippie side of things, who had deep distrust of pharmaceuticals, were all of a sudden like, well, we should trust these drug companies. And I'm like,
what
did that
say? Yeah, you're sitting back going, as a tribalism person, you're like, what? Like,
yeah.
So the fear thing, it just goes back to my point earlier, is like, I think there's just two camps of people. And I feel like, you know, on a more introspective thought, I think this whole reality of this whole duality of everything is it's a duopoly, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the right word I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's it.
And I feel like we kind of, I don't know, man. I seem to think that we have chosen to come into this reality and experience this timeline and this reality because there are things that we want or need to learn.
Yeah.
Like we come in and we take it. We have these challenges and we deal with people that fucking test our patience. Mm-hmm. We deal with people who want to take away our freedoms and our rights. And I feel like the power structures know that. They capitalize off that because they know what's important and dear to us.
Yeah.
And they are constantly fucking attacking it all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And they're constantly saying that the left needs to be afraid of the right because they're going to do this. And they're saying, telling the right that they need to be afraid of the left because they all want to do this. Well, I know a lot of fucking liberals. I know a lot of fucking Republicans. Mm-hmm. And I know a fuck ton of moderate people. Mm-hmm. And most of these people, none of them think the way that we're told that they think.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Most of them don't. I mean, yes, there are the outliers. There are the people who really get immersed in this stuff because they truly think they're doing it for some sort of virtuous reason.
Right.
But in the end, we're just all being fucking played.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the way like,
distracted.
Well, I think of it in terms of, improv or, joke writing. It's like, they're always heightening it because it makes it, they heighten everything because why normal news is not fun. Normal life is not fun for them and it doesn't make them money. So they're heightening everything to the extreme, which pushes at both ends. So it's just like most of us don't even go to those edges. Not at all. But the only thing we have is the media feeding us from both sides. So we're like, well, I guess that must be how it is. I mean, I think it's probably part of the problem with like people shooting random people in parking lots because they like got in the wrong car. It's like, oh, they're out to get me. It's like, oh, you know, we've all made mistakes. I've gotten in the wrong car. You know, that's not my Uber. Yeah. Everyone's so scared of everything. And it's just really sad that we're in that.
It's hard. It's hard to think rationally when you're scared. I mean, I'll be the first admit, like if I get scared, I get, you know, very protective and, you can easily spiral.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're just bombarded with it constantly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, you know, just having, and going back to the whole Buddhist monk thing, that was so powerful because it really, really says to all of us that you are way more powerful than you think you are. And if a power structure can't scare you with death, if you're not afraid of death, and that's the thing that they never really liked about religion. The one thing that's, religion's great, to get people fighting, but what it's not good for them is you know, knowing that there's a place that they go afterwards,
right?
Or that we don't, you know, we don't really die; we just continue on.
Yeah, yeah.
everybody knows that. How the fuck are you going to scare people?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You could never control anybody if everybody was just like, oh, okay, that's cute. You're going to kill me. Okay.
Yeah. Right. That's what I always I'm comfortable. I was like, I'll be back. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'll come back next three years. I believe that.
And I believe that based off of just my own personal experiences. I mean, good Lord, there's so much. I know we got off on the whole, I know it's conspiracy podcast.
Oh no, this has been great.
Yeah. I can tell you, this is it. This is the big 5 hours conspiracy
worth of supernatural stories. Yeah. Yeah. This is ridiculous.
No, I love this, man. Yeah. This has been great, man. And this is, obviously we're going to have you on again because you have all those stories. I would love to hear them all.
Yeah.
We got to get you in the studio. We got to come down to Atlanta. We're talking to Tom Simmons. And I was like, oh, you remember old Jared Harris? And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, you got to get up with that guy. I was like, hell yeah, we do. We need that. He's like, you guys should do a run of shows with him and just have him on the pod and do pod. Yeah.
That'd be great.
I love Tom so much, man. Yeah. He's such a, just a great comic and just a, it's a good dude, man.
Good dude.
Yeah. You should do his pod, man. Pop up. Do his pod.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, he texted me not that long ago. I'm finally getting back into comedy.
That's great.
Just, I've been on this major, major hiatus. I'm finally starting to get back into comedy. So within the month, I should be putting content out again. Finally. Oh, probably just going to do a lot of content first. Mm-hmm. And then, just do some shows here or there.
Nice.
And not kill myself like I did before with doing shows.
Well, it's hard to figure out when to end something like this, but we always end kind of with a final thought. And so I'll kick it off.
Okay.
And it's sort of my attempt to, again, tie all the loose ends together. I'm struck by the beginning of the conversation where you talk about these experiences that you had as a young man into your 20s. And I think that it's that reality, right? The reality that, like, given training or an experience, you can be awakened to a broader sense of reality. That is exactly what the power structure that be wants to avoid in a mass way, you know, because again, if people understand that there is a separate reality, I mean, the easiest analogy is if you unplug someone from the matrix and they realize that, like, holy shit, this shit I've been worrying about is such a distraction. Mm-hmm. It's literally what they want me arguing about.
Yeah.
Then the whole system sort of collapses.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, if the world could stand somewhere all together and the people that had power and money stood in one group and everyone else stood in the other group, we'd be like, what?
Yeah, what are we doing? We're so much stronger.
What are we doing? Why are they in control?
Yeah, it makes no fucking sense.
Like, we could all have a house. We could all have enough food.
Yeah.
We could just live a pretty subsistent sort of farming lifestyle, and everyone could just be like, yeah, we live in a very simple world. But we're all really happy. And all the modern problems of depression and addiction, all these things that are like self-created, self-generated problems would start to some sense subside, you know?
Absolutely.
So,
yeah, I love that. I'm gonna give my thought and then I'll let you go final, Jared. I love this too because I think that, like, and maybe not awakening. You mentioned awakening ourselves to these realities. I think it's a reawakening because these are experiences kids have all the time. All the time.
Sure.
And we're just oftentimes we forget them. Yeah, like, I have a memory of sleeping on a bed in a I think it was our grandparents' house. I can't remember where it was, but all three of us kids were floating above the bed playing. Like, we were asleep on the bed, but we were all playing and in a round rosy thing in the air above the bed. And this was not a dream. This was like, we were literally, and they don't remember it obviously, but I'm like, my part of my family would like always see their relatives and talk to them. The kids would be like, oh, I'm talking to grandpa. That happens all the time. And like, past lives, that's a common thing. Great. We've talked about this a lot on the pod, a lot of past life experiences. And I think we've all had them. We just keep, you know, just keep living our lives. And, but we just keep getting stuck by it. Who are these assholes that keep putting us under their thumb? Like, why do they keep, who are they, aliens? Who are these people? Why are they different than us? And why are they mean? I don't like them. But anyway, if you can find it in your daily life, which we all have a hard time, especially with a podcast with beer in the name, to stop drinking and stop smoking as much weed as we do. And
do as we say, yeah, not as we do.
And focus. You can actually have these experiences. Like I said, the Phase, check it out online. The Phase, the Monroe Institute. I've shared all the Monroe Institute tapes with you guys. If you want them, I'll share them again. But there are ways to experience what we've talked about, yeah, and we just got to focus on it. So, all right, Jerry, what you got?
Well, just to add to what you said, yeah, I'm super glad you did that with the Monroe Institute stuff, because very, very useful stuff. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think ultimately, like, I would love for more people to have these experiences, because, yeah, they're so powerful. I know we didn't get into all of the experiences, but they're powerful, and they give you a different perspective, and they really kind of truly let you see that you are controlled by fear.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's love is a different, you know, it's a different resonance. It's a different frequency. There was a buddy that mine told me something that has always stuck with me. It's like, you can't be angry and grateful at the same time.
Oh yeah.
Whenever I get angry about something, I just immediately, I'm not being true when I say it. I try to remember.
Yeah.
Right.
To be great, to think of the things that I'm grateful for, mm-hmm, because it really truly does. It puts you in a different, you're just vibrating at a different frequency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's so powerful. It's just a really powerful tool to use, just that one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really helped me out a lot. But you know, be the first to admit, I spiral sometimes, and yeah, I'm just like, this day's like sucks, you know, like, yeah, all these crappy things. But it's that one thing that I just try to remember, and man, it helps so much. And you know, hopefully, maybe other people can use that, because you know, at the end of the day, I feel like for the most part, humans we all want the same thing. We just want to be happy, mm-hmm, want to be loved, and yeah, it's powerful, man. It's hate is also very powerful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Star Wars is so right.
Yeah. I think we're in challenging times, and I love just the fact that we can talk about stuff like this, because yeah, I think it's important to talk to people.
Absolutely.
Not be afraid to talk to people who think differently than you do.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing I could say to end with. Okay. But yeah.
Yeah.
Y'all having me on.
Yeah.
I had a good talk.
Loved it.
Yeah. Hell
yeah.
Yeah. We'll have you again on soon, man.
Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah. Cause I know you got so many more stories, and you're always a blast.
Y'all just froze again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We can hear you. So let me just say, when you do release content coming up soon, where will people be able to find that, so our listeners can, do you have a handle yet for that? A channel?
I've got a bunch of pages that I haven't posted on in a while. Jared Harris Comedy probably will be the page.
Okay.
It'll be kind of all the
comments. We'll shout it out on our social feeds too.
And also quick, tell us about Jared's place. It's a great place that you've built over the years, and I know we have people that would love to check it out. Yeah. So
we're the first shuttle mountain bike park in Georgia. We opened like a year ago. But if anybody rides mountain bikes, or
I ride mountain bikes all the time. Yeah.
Well, hell yeah, dude. You gotta come down. Just let me know if you wanna come. We got camping, beautiful. It's like we have 230 acres on the side of a mountain, essentially. So, and then we're surrounded by a national forest. So it really feels like it feels like a vacation, but you're only 1 hour 20 from Atlanta.
Nice.
Oh, that's killer.
We should come down and do maybe a show with you down there. That'd be awesome.
I do want to do a show there at some point. Probably would be, I'm thinking like the fall maybe.
Nice.
Do a show there.
That'd be great.
Probably in conjunction with one of the events that we have there, just, you know, to have a, really good crowd and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be fun. I've actually done a few shows for the mountain bike community. And,
oh, cool.
This is one of my favorite shows I've ever done. I did them just in the middle of the woods and in the middle of the night.
Hell yeah. Killer. That's great.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to come down and ride mountain bikes, man. It's like,
yeah,
that'd be awesome.
I got you covered. We even got rental bikes and stuff too. Like if you're just driving through and you're like, you know, I don't have my bike. We got helmets, pads, bike, got everything for you.
Yeah. And you have different levels, right? So it's like a ski course. You have black diamond. Yeah. So you have like all type. Is it the same?
Is it lift assisted?
Yeah. You said lift assist, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we have. Well, so we do shuttles.
Oh, shuttles. That's right. Yeah.
I wish we had a ski lift. That would be amazing.
One day.
But insanely expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. We do shuttles and, they're just, you get on the truck. It's like a flatbed. It's got all these benches on it and like a cover over the top of that. So you're kind of in the shade.
Killer.
And then a trailer would like, you know, you could put 20 bikes on and then we drive you up the side of a mountain and it's a little sketchy looking at first. Yeah. You're like, Jesus, this is steep.
I love it. What the hell?
Is this truck going to make it up this hill? And they always do.
Hell yeah.
And then we let you out. And then, yeah, we've got everything from beginner, like green beginner trails all the way up to like pro level.
What's the length of that ride from top to bottom?
It just depends on how fast you are, which trails you're on.
Yeah.
You know, slower riders, probably our longest trail for a slow rider, if you're going from the very top down the bottom, I mean, if you're slow, probably like 7 or 8 minutes.
That's cool. Okay. Killer. Nice.
But yeah, but the really, really fast riders, you know.
They're ripping it. Just
a lot quicker. But yeah. But it's long enough. I mean, after 4 minutes of doing that kind of you're kind of, well, at least I am anyway. My
big,
wrist,
yeah, are, big
yeah,
jumps.
You're rattled.
You got big jumps on there and stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. We've got the biggest jump line in the southeast, not on the east coast. There's a bike park up north that's kind of got us beat.
Yeah, killer, man.
Barely. we got the biggest jump line in the southeast, though.
Amazing.
Well, dude, I'll definitely come down. Yeah. That's right up my alley.
Yeah, dude, you'd love it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, just give us a follow. It's my handle on Instagram is Jared Loves Biscuits, and then the bike park is Jared's Place. And the reason it's called Jared's Place is because that's literally just what everybody started calling it. And
nice.
I wasn't going to change it, so I was just like, all right, we'll just keep it Jared.
Hell yeah.
Wow. Hell yeah. This is really awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing you at Jared's Place, back on the pod, and back doing comedy and making content. But thank you for sharing your stories with us today. It was really awesome.
Yeah, this is awesome. Thanks, Jared. Thanks.
Well, I appreciate y'all having me.
Yeah, well, thanks. Well, thank you all for listening. As always, we're still Conspiracy Beer Me. I'm Justin.
I'm Shane, and this was
Jared Harris.